Hey, this is Kyle Clark. You're listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News and streaming live same time on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com. Democratic leaders from across Colorado will gather tonight to decide what to do about Governor Jared Polis. Many of them are furious that he's releasing Tina Peters from prison less than 2 years into her 9-year sentence for leading a breach of Colorado's voting systems. Polis is term limited, lame duck. There are some far left calls for his impeachment through the legislature, but that's not going anywhere. So tonight, the 500 or so members of the Colorado Democratic Party State Central Committee will consider whether to punish Polis in some other way, like censuring him or banning him from speaking at party events or putting out a statement saying that Polis should not have bowed to pressure from President Trump to release Peters. Almost 800 party leaders and organizers signed a petition calling for some action against Polis. It's a list that includes a number of state legislators and a DNC member. I'm told that the Democratic State Party chair is going to allow the full Central Committee to consider taking some action tonight. This is an online meeting that began a moment ago. We'll keep you updated. House Republicans are now investigating Denver and Boulder's policies that limit local law enforcement cooperation with federal immigration agents. The House Judiciary Committee sent letters to district attorneys, sheriffs, and police chiefs of several so-called sanctuary cities and counties, including Denver and Boulder. The House Republicans accused those municipalities of giving preferential treatment to people living in the country without documentation. The committee wants to see some paperwork, including all communication with ICE since last January. One letter also calls out Boulder police for deactivating a feature on their Flock license plate reader system last June that allowed federal immigration agents to search their data. Boulder's Democratic District Attorney, Michael Dougherty, who is also running for state AG, said this investigation is political theater. He said that it just ignores failures in the immigration system. Denver's district attorney, John Walsh, said that the letter from the feds is riddled with inaccuracies. We have not seen public polling in the Democratic race for governor, but the candidates sure are attacking each other like it's close. There are negative ads airing, not paid for by either Michael Bennett or Phil Weiser. Tonight, our Marshall Zellinger puts them to the truth test.
Died because Trump locked kids in cages.
There is a theme in the attack ads against Democratic gubernatorial candidates Phil Weiser and Michael Bennett.
This Trump cabinet secretary wants to sell off Colorado public lands.
The ads are about their connection with President Trump. Mind you, they're running for Colorado governor. Let's start with the pro-Bennett, anti-Weiser ad paid for by a group called Rocky Mountain Way.
Before he ran for governor, Weiser joined fewer lawsuits against Trump than almost any other Democratic attorney general in the country.
This claim is about Trump's first term, an important caveat that the ad's not being clear about. It's true, our research shows he wasn't near the top of the list when it comes to Democratic attorneys general who sued Trump in his first term.
Compare that to Trump's second term. Weiser is now part of 65 lawsuits against the administration. Colorado has joined most of those lawsuits led by other states. You can decide for yourself if he's doing that because he's now running for governor. The Colorado Sun has an excellent tracker updated Wednesday showing the 65th case and the status of all of them. Now to an anti-Bennett, pro-Weiser ad by a group called Fighting for Colorado.
In fact, Michael Bennett voted to confirm nearly 200 Trump nominees, more than almost any other Democrat.
No, even using a liberal definition of more than almost any other Democrat, it's not accurate. And the group behind the ad provided an incomplete list of nominee votes.
It includes votes for judges, undersecretaries, and military leaders, most of them in Trump's first term. As for the current term, it includes only 8 of Trump's 23 cabinet votes. Conveniently, the 8 that Bennett voted yes. So the math is skewed. But even with what the ad references, Bennett has not voted to confirm more than almost any other Democrat.
So, who are behind these attack ads? The anti-Weiser ad is mainly paid for by former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg. He's contributed $2.5 million to the Political Action Committee creating the ads in favor of Michael Bennett. There are some dark money groups as well that we can't see their donors. The anti-Bennett ad is paid for mostly by individuals. One is a former oil and gas executive, another from a private equity firm, Kyle.
So here we have a race between Bennett and Weiser, between two guys who don't disagree on a ton, right? When you look at the spectrum of Democratic politics, they're pretty close to one another. So where they do have differences over, like, the tack you take on Trump, it's being blown up like it's the biggest thing in the world.
Right. What? How has your approach been with President Trump? And they're going to have to make the case for why that matters as governor of Colorado. But yeah, the their ads are positive so far about themselves and perhaps how they've attacked President Trump individually, but then these attack ads are like, well, they're not going after Trump enough. It's like, great. Well, this is Colorado governor, guys. Don't forget that.
Yeah. All right. Marshall Zellinger, thank you. Hey, we're less than 2 weeks away from gubernatorial primary debates on 9 News. 9 News is hosting the only scheduled debate with all three Republican candidates for governor. State Senator Barb Kirkmeyer, State Rep Scott Bottoms, and Ministry Leader Victor Marks debate live on 9 News, 6 p.m. on Tuesday, June 2nd. And then on Thursday, June 4th at 6 p.m., another commercial-free, hour-long debate featuring the Democratic primary candidates, U.S. Senator Michael Bennett and Attorney General Phil Weiser. Ballots hit the mail in early June for the June 30th primary. Workers at the Cargill Beef Plant in Fort Morgan were locked out by the company today following months of unsuccessful contract talks. Negotiations started in February, and the union says about 90% of workers voted against the company's latest offer before the lockout. The company says it initiated the lockout because of, quote, uncertainty about a potential work stoppage, as in, we're going to lock the doors before you can strike on us. The union represents around 1,700 workers at the plant and says the company's refused to offer improvements to their wages, health care, and workplace conditions.
We're not asking for a ton. We're not asking to be greedy. We're asking to pay our bills. That's it. We make the steaks. Why can't we afford to buy one?
Cargill is the largest employer in the Fort Morgan area. They say that they do not believe that customers should see any impacts from the lockout. The union says they remain willing to return to the bargaining table if the company's up for it. A new state law meant to help struggling rural pharmacies is now creating confusion over who exactly is covered, and some pharmacists say they aren't seeing the promised financial relief. Our Evan Krugel explains why.
In small towns across Colorado, pharmacies do more than just fill prescriptions.
Being in a rural area, we are kind of one of the main sources of healthcare in our community.
Lucas Smith owns pharmacies in Buena Vista and Salida, where middleman companies hired by insurance plans determine how much he gets paid for prescriptions.
It's often under or maybe at our cost of the medication. We're really not making any money. I mean, the bottles aren't free, the vials aren't, the labels aren't free, the power's not free.
That's why Lucas was excited when Governor Polis signed a bill last year requiring those companies to pay rural pharmacies a dispensing fee, about $14 per prescription, to help cover the cost of filling it.
This bill provided a lot of hope, and that hope is dwindling every day it passes.
5 months into the bill's existence, Lucas says companies still aren't paying those dispensing fees, and the state isn't enforcing it, saying the law does not apply to many employer-sponsored and government health plans, which make up most of the market.
To me and most pharmacies, it was very clear on what it was intended, and now it's just kind of a slap in the face that they're like, nope. Just joking, it's only going to last, it's only going to apply to this small percentage, and good luck with everything else.
The state's Division of Regulatory Agencies says it's operating under the belief that the bill does not apply to employer-sponsored plans, but says it's created a complaint portal and is reviewing all submissions for potential systemic issues.
Now, a spokesperson for DORA says they've explained these definitions to the stakeholders involved in this legislation multiple times. But, Kyle, obviously, there is still some confusion here. We did ask the governor's office for a comment since he does oversee the Division of Insurance. So far, no response.
He's a pretty busy guy this week, Evan. What do we think about a potential fix for this?
Yeah, this gets really complicated. DORA says state code simply says they can't cover these other plans. So this may require some legislative tweaking, potentially not just to this bill, but to other language that makes up how Colorado governs this type of situation.
Evan, thank you. All right, what do you say we do some good in Colorado? Your weekly microgiving has raised $18 million over 6 years. And this week, let's send some kids with health challenges to summer camp. This week's Word of Thanks microgiving campaign supports the week-long free camps at the nonprofit Roundup River Ranch. That camp in Gypsum welcomes kids from all across Colorado, kids who are all dealing with some kind of life-altering diagnosis. The campers are grouped together based on their health challenges, so they'll meet other kids going through similar things, and so that the medical professionals on staff are prepared to meet their needs that week. This is about an old-fashioned summer camp experience for young people whose medical issues prevent them from going to other camps. And it's about creating a place where their parents have total trust that the medical staff take the best care of their kids. And we have the special opportunity to double this community's giving this week because our donations are all going to be matched by a generous donor up to $25,000. This is going to send a whole lot of kids to summer camp. Scan the QR code on your screen or text the word thanks to 303-871-1491. We'll shoot you that link to donate. Even $5 helps, and this week we double it to $10. You know the deal. I'll never ask you to give if I don't. So I'll match the first 50 donations of $5 to get us started. And we're coming up on 8,000 of you signed up to make a monthly donation to the Word of Thanks Fund. Set it and forget it. You put in your info one time, you pick a donation amount, and it's automatically split among all the nonprofits we feature. And that's how we have started recent weeks of giving with almost $50,000. Denver's mayor is celebrating a decrease in homelessness, finally, and announcing another ambitious goal.
I think I just really love to connect with nature and just to see the natural world.
And an honor for a young Coloradan with a very particular love of the outdoors. That's next. We now know what exactly a former Cherry Creek school board member said that led to his resignation last month. And it's not great. At least three people told the school board that Terry Bates made racist comments to people from Mexico, including asking if they had used a coyote to come to the United States, as in like a smuggler who helps people cross the border illegally. According to the reports given to the school board, the people that Bates spoke to like that were pretty offended. The school board put out a statement saying they have zero tolerance for that kind of thing. They accepted his resignation last month. Denver's mayor is celebrating a nearly 13% drop in overall homelessness in the city. Mayor's office says it is the first year-to-year decline in homelessness in 9 years. Since Mike Johnson was elected in 2023, his office says they have been able to reduce street homelessness 64%. The numbers that they point to come from the 2026 point-in-time count. That is an annual count of the number of people experiencing homelessness on a night in January each year. The mayor has made homelessness a top focus of his administration and spent more than $200 million in the last 3 years trying to move people indoors. Today, Johnson said federal funding cuts have made it challenging to get people out of the transitional housing and into permanent digs.
I think the biggest challenge for us that we're seeing from federal cuts are a reduction in the total number of housing vouchers we can use to get people up and out into permanent housing. And so there have been hundreds of vouchers we've lost over the course of the last couple of years.
Johnson says they are aiming for a 75% reduction in Denver's street homelessness by 2027. He came into office promising that Denver would become the first major city in America to achieve functionally no chronic homelessness. This same report that found the 13% decline in Denver also found that homelessness across the entire metro area decreased about 1% from last year. Meteorologist Chris Bianchi's along, and Chris, you're going to have lots of Avs fan, obviously, inside Ball Arena tonight, outside for Avs Alley. They would be out there in pouring rain, lightning, thunder, anything else, but what did they sign up for tonight?
So the good news is the rain's basically done. So we know they're tough as nails. We know they'll hang out there and cheer on the Avs outside there at Avs Alley. But the good news is the rain basically over and done with. Still a few showers here in the South Metro area from about Kenosha Pass on east to about Castle Rock, so Douglas County and the southern Jeffco foothills, the Hogback, still seeing a little bit of that thunder shower activity. But in downtown Denver and points north, I think we're done with the rain for the evening. So you got those outdoor plans. I know there are lots of things going on this evening. I know McGregor Square holding an outdoor event and the Rapids playing coming up at 8 p.m. at Dick's Sporting Goods Park. It should be dry for those events. Just again, I would still bring the rain jacket just in case. I'm going to leave a 10-20% chance for a shower in Denver this evening. But again, most likely we are done with the rain here in town. Any last showers should clear out within the next hour or two. This will push over the eastern plains, so La Junta, Lyman on east, you'll have the best chance of seeing showers and storms. Then tomorrow could have some active weather over the eastern plains in yellow. Highest risk for seeing some large hail. That's going to be our primary risk for tomorrow. Notice it does not include Denver. Still a chance we see some showers and storms in Denver tomorrow afternoon and tomorrow night. But the risk and the coverage of those showers and storms won't be as widespread as what we've had over the last few days. And then we'll finally dry out and warm up. And best news of all this weekend, because of all the rain we picked up this week, fire danger is going to be very low this weekend and for Memorial Day.
You know, you hear it's hard to get kids off the screens into the outdoors these days. Maybe the seventh grader from Morrison can lead the way. Her unique story next. A seventh grader from Colorado was getting national recognition, not for the usual, you know, like grades or musical ability or sports. No, she specializes in something else that takes patience, curiosity, and focus. Our Byron Reed has her story.
Yeah. Achieving a goal takes focus.
I'm less of a photographer and more of just trying to, like, capture the essence of a bird.
It's a strategy that's helping 12-year-old Amelie Anderson keep her dream job in her sight.
I think definitely becoming like an ornithologist, which studies birds, definitely working with birds and helping conservation.
Ooh, the robin's eating worms.
Anderson has been birding in Jefferson County
since I was 8,
where she and her father Mark share the same passion for keeping an eye on nature.
Birding is just watching, observing, looking at birds, just going out in nature, maybe observing in your backyard.
Grackle or blackbird?
That focus has taken her far. She recently won the American Birding Association's Young Birder of the Year in the 10 to 13-year-old age group.
It was sort of unbelievable. My mom, like, showed me the email. I was like, what? I was like, they must have made a mistake. The Pacific wren is my favorite species of bird.
Amelie entered work in categories like field notebook, illustration, and photography, earning top recognition among young birders nationwide.
I think I just really love to connect with nature and just to see the natural world and always just to see these birds and to have questions.
It's a passion that's taken her around the world.
Like Canada, obviously the U.S., Peru, Costa Rica. I've seen over 700. And in the U.S. and Canada, which is like the ABA area, I've seen over 400.
She says her dad even picked up the art for detail.
Yeah, he's sort of a birder now.
While getting in some daddy-daughter time.
We're like, well, this is what Amelie is into. I want to do something that she likes, and so I can have a way to spend time with her, and it's paid off really well.
For Amelie, the lesson is simple. Achievement is the willingness to keep looking a little closer.
Birding is really like an awesome, engaging activity.
For next,
that you can really help explore the natural world.
I'm Byron Reed.
How many dads have dragged their kids into being interested in birds, and it's the exact opposite way? Svi, thank you. Feedback next. The kids who come to the free week-long summer camps at Roundup River Ranch all have something in common. They have some kind of life-altering diagnosis. And this year's camps will welcome kids with 40 different challenges, all united by their desire to just have the same classic summer camp experience as their classmates. Scan the QR code on your screen or text the word thanks to 303-871-1491 to join me and a bunch of other Coloradans in supporting Roundup River Ranch. They never charge their campers or their families a dime, and they've recently expanded so they can welcome even more kids from all over Colorado. I should mention this week our donations up to $25,000 will be matched by a generous donor. Shirley writes in to say the Word of Thanks website, new website's beautiful. She says clear, easy to navigate, all this praise from a senior citizen. Our new website is wordofthanks.org, wordofthanks.org. You can go on there and see all the good you've done, see a map all over the state. Tom in Denver says thanks for reporting the Cargill lockout in Fort Morgan. Most of the time these issues are overlooked because it's not Metro Denver. For sure, we understand how important that plant is to that community, so we'll stay on it. See you next time. Thanks for listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News. Streaming live, same time, on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com. Next producer is Mallory Harris. Our digital producer is Marilyn Moore. Our visual editor is Jeff Sartell. Our reporters include Marshall Zellinger, Mark Salinger, Angeline McCall, and Evan Kruel. Misty Montano is 9 News' digital director. I'm Kyle Clark. I'll see you next time.